Hi, my name is Mark Dorman, and I'm the President and CEO of Law and Business in North America, which is part of the Legal and Regulatory Division.
Bart van Bierkens, I'm a CFO and a member of the Executive Board.
Great, thanks everyone. So we've had a busy first half year. If you look at our results through the half year, we've made considerable progress in terms of the fundamentals of our strategy, which is around the transformation of the portfolio. We had a good improvement in our growth of the business. We had revenue growth of 3%, 1% organic. Very importantly, we are focused on the continued digitization of our business, and we saw strong online and software growth of 7%. Continue to see good, stable profitability, and very importantly, we see improved underlying trends in our retention levels and new sales across the board. So very much pleased with the first half, and we're tracking extremely well in terms of our full year expectations. Today, we also announced that we were divesting our pharma-related assets. With this strategic decision, the health division will be able to take full advantage of the very strong market positions that we have both in professional information as well as clinical decision support. As you know, clinical decision support, where today we are the market leader, it's one of the fastest growing areas of health. So we will continue to invest in innovation and globalization across the health group. And I think if you look at the first half results for health, what you see is that with this decision around our pharma assets, that our portfolio has stronger potential from a growth perspective. So that's kind of the results in a nutshell. What I now want to do is really shift gears and talk about how we see some of the elements of the industry unfolding. Some of you may know this, which is that today this year, Wolters Kluwer is officially 175 years old as a company. If I look at the pace of change over that 175 years and look to the future, what I see is that the changes that we expect in the next 5 years will be so much more dynamic than anything we've seen in the prior 175 years. So because of that, we've now coined kind of the next frontier. So when we talk about the next frontier, what we are specifically looking at is the increase in the amount of information that our customers have to deal with. Now that in and of itself is not a new trend, but what we see more and more is that not only are our customers overloaded with information, but that they really need to be connected to expertise. So we see that our markets are really shifting from customers saying, give me access to information, to now, give me access to expertise. And if you look at what Wolters Kluwer does, the heart and soul of the business is around helping our customers interpret information, helping our customers make better decisions, helping our customers be more productive. And we do that by imparting expertise to our customers. So what I'd now like to do is turn it over to Andrew, who will talk a little bit about how this new frontier is taking hold in the medical area. Richard. Andrew, sorry. You have one of those names.
I do.
Andrew
Thanks,
Richardson.
There we go. Andrew. Thanks very much, Nancy. Let's talk about the explosion of information which Nancy mentioned. Just try and contextualize that a little. Every minute of every day, a medical article is published. There are 2,000 publishers publishing 26,000 journals, which equates to about 1.5 million papers going to 10 million readers in 10,000 institutions worldwide. Since we started talking, that means that slightly above 5 articles have been published. So this pile will be growing throughout our conversation today. And bear in mind that the peer-reviewed journal article is the number one source of information for the physician or the medical researcher. Now, at the same time, we're seeing continued growth in the use of evidence-based practice right across professions worldwide. This is a way of validating decision-making, both clinical decision-making and budgetary decision-making. So obviously using empirical evidence to make far-reaching decisions about patient outcomes, but also about how money is spent and how funds are allocated, which obviously with so many health systems being publicly funded continues to be very important. And this trend is as relevant in India as it is in Amsterdam. It's a worldwide trend. So to meet these needs, what we're thinking about all the time is how we bridge research with practice, how we take that deep research and bring it to the person at the sharp end. And this is our next frontier. And within medical research, we call this strategy go clinical, go local, and go mobile. So let's talk about going clinical a little. Information which sits in a library or in a database is, by definition, static. It's all there, but you have to go and get it. What we need in order to bring this information to the clinician, to the practice point, if you will, is to make it dynamic, actionable, tailored. In some respects, less is more. And it has to be easy to use, and it has to be focused, clinically focused. For example, we all know that when you go and see a doctor, that doctor has a very, very short time to spend with you. So if somebody walks in and they have an irregular heartbeat, the doctor needs to access some very brief information very quickly, but that information is critical. It's core and critical. So he will probably consult UpToDate. UpToDate takes deep research, evidence-based information, and it essentially condenses it, makes it usable, turns it into synoptic information. So the doctor can consult that very quickly during the time with the patient. He can make the recommendations, recommend a treatment path, and so on. But there may be something at the back of his mind that says, well, I need to know more. There's something in here that I just need to check out. So he would go back to the library, perhaps, and he would log on to Ovid, for example, and he would look at the deep medical research in there. Now, wouldn't it be great if you were able to do that on a single interface and join those two things up? Well, you can. And it's called OvidMD, and it was launched this year, and it's very successful. Talking about Ovid, Ovid is a truly global business and always has been. I don't know how familiar you are with it, but it's a medical research platform which essentially aggregates very large quantities, the highest quality medical information. Ovid reaches 157 countries, about, depending on how you measure it, 13 million users. So when I'm talking about going local, I'm talking about the reach of Ovid into 157 countries worldwide, delivering the highest quality medical information. But I'm also talking about the way that research is developing worldwide. There's a lot of research that's carried out in the emerging world, which doesn't get into the top 5, the top 10, even the top 200 journals. And a lot of it is very good and very worthwhile. So we're working with local journal publishers, local academics, local research institutions, first of all, to develop different ways of delivering that information, and also, you know, using the existing platforms to bring it to the world at large, if you will. A couple of examples of that. Last year, we went into partnership with Enstinet in Egypt, which is part of the Ministry of Education. Under their umbrella, they have 150 or so medical journals, some of which are in English, some of which are in Arabic. At the moment, 10 of those English language journals are now published by LWW. In the couple of years' time, that will rise to 40. At the same time, we've launched an Arabic language platform, which covers some of the other journals. And by the way, we've also launched a Chinese language platform, a French language platform, and a Spanish language platform. And watch this space, because there will be others. Now, you may say, why is that important? Well, if you're a doctor, if you're a professor or a PhD, you probably speak pretty good English. Doesn't really matter where you are in the world. You can access the information. If you're a nurse or a paramedic, and more responsibility is being put on you, because that's a very good way of managing cost and making delivery more efficient, if you're in Beijing or Berlin, you probably don't speak fluent English. So you need to access that information in your own language. Going local also means we're looking at different business models. You know, historically and traditionally, the journal has been sold on subscription, and you know, a large library, a Harvard or an Oxford, will buy subscriptions to the journals that it needs. In the developing world, that money isn't necessarily available. So the open access model really plays quite strongly in those markets. And it's a model that we support hugely, and we're getting involved in a number of experiments around that. So I've talked a bit about what Go Clinical means and about what Go Local means. So Go Mobile, well, that it really is the next frontier for us. Going mobile actually allows us to go clinical and to go local. Tablets, there's been an explosion. I mean, I won't revisit the growth of the iPad, that we all know about that. But essentially, 4 out of 5 doctors plan to buy an iPad in the next year. By 2013, maybe even sooner, mobile computing will have outstripped desktop computing. And what that means is that we need to respond by providing content that plays well in that medium. It's a huge and exciting challenge for us to provide dynamic multimedia content. You may be familiar with the American Academy of Neurology, their journal Neurology. We've launched an iPad app in the last couple of months for that, and also Circulation, the American Heart Association journal. And this is presenting content in a very different way, and it's a way that doctors are used to using information. They're used to looking at x-rays electronically and so on. So if you can present that information to them dynamically and make it interactive, then you really are bringing it to the point of use. But there are also more opportunities around that. Think about sub-Saharan Africa. There are 1 billion people in sub-Saharan Africa, and there are 500,000 mobile phones. Now, the reason that growth has been so huge has been that there's really no technological infrastructure. Similarly in India, but certainly in sub-Saharan Africa. So applications have developed. Banking, the mobile money is probably the one that everybody knows, but there are many others. Weather forecasting, crop reports, mobile untethered applications. Now, at the same time, there's been a lot of philanthropic work going on, making content available to countries in sub-Saharan Africa. And that's great, but it's available through a computer terminal, usually in a university library in a capital city. Wouldn't it be great if you could get really relevant information delivered to the area where there's a famine or where there's a drought, and it was information that was actionable and usable? Now, we believe that that's our next frontier, and that's, I think, a real example of bridging research and practice.
Thank you, Andrew. In fact, what was interesting is about a month ago, I was in India and was fortunate to meet with about 30 of the leading physicians there, and they talked very much about this whole opportunity, which is if you go out in the rural areas, the single way that people get information is largely through their mobile phone. And so how do they begin to disseminate information and, more importantly, even images, because there's still illiteracy that at a fairly high level in some of these areas. So this new frontier about mobility is extremely exciting to us, not just in the health area, but in other markets that we serve. So maybe with that, I'll turn it over to Mark Dorman, who's going to talk about how mobility is also impacting the legal profession in North America.
Okay, thank you, Nancy, and good morning to everyone. So when I think about mobility, you know, it's long been, you know, a promise that all the, you know, technology companies have been predicting that it's going to change the way we work, change the way we interact with one another. And I think when we think back to 2011, it probably will be a watershed year where mobile devices in general really are beginning to change the world in the way that we connect with one another. So if you think at the start of 2011, you had the Arab Spring, which, you know, largely to a bunch of, people within various countries decided to stand up for their rights, and most of that was either incited, communicated, recorded, and certainly directed through the use of mobile technology, either by mobile phones and texting, through cameras, through Twitter accounts that couldn't be shut down by governments. All of that happened through the, the use of mobile devices. So when we think of, legal, and we tend to think that legal is very local because each jurisdiction is very similar, but there are large global trends that we see where mobility is having a big impact in the way that people are connecting with one another. Because one of the interesting things about mobile devices is we're no longer connecting New York to Amsterdam or Amsterdam with Shanghai as great trading centers. We're connecting Leiden with Akron, Ohio, or with Kunming City in China. It's individual, and it's disconnected, and it's of the moment, and it's really supporting international trade in new and complex ways. And if we think of the backdrop of the last couple of years, where we've had significant economic challenges, certainly in the Western world, with emerging markets continuing to grow, albeit a little slower, but certainly growing up, people are looking for new ways of trading, new ways of interacting with one another. So how does that impact the legal community? Well, of course, the law is the foundation of trade. Without both parties being able to trust each other as to what the rules are, how do I protect my IP? What are the rules about investment? Clearly, the law has a big part to play in creating trade. And anything that improves both the productivity of the legal process, that speeds up transactions, that helps protect assets and collateral elsewhere, is a big improvement to the flow of international trade. So what we're seeing in terms of the legal community, not just in the US but globally, is not just this normal way of us no longer being chained to the office, but being chained to work. I'm sure you all carry your mobile devices everywhere and get your emails and documents that you need to access on the flow. And that certainly happens within the legal community. But what's of particular interest over the last couple of years is, this notion of the lost generation and the lost generation to technology. So if you think about, the huge impact that the internet has had on productivity for knowledge workers and being able to access information anywhere, certainly cloud computing is a big component of that, that's largely been through devices that require a keyboard as the primary input mechanism. And for a certain generation, let's call them an elder generation, that never learned to type, they couldn't engage with technology because it's too complex for them to engage with a keyboard. But over the last couple of years, touchscreens, multimedia have become, the main input mechanisms. And certainly, through the growth of tablets in the last year, I know several senior partners at global law firms who, make the claim that they've never sent an email. They still do dictation with their secretary sitting at their desk. They all now have tablets. They all now use them as devices and are accessing technology in a way that's never been seen before. Now, why is this important? The biggest challenge facing all professions, and certainly the legal community is no different, is how do I get junior associates to understand not only the black letter of the law, but also the context of how I apply the law in specific circumstances. And historically, that's taken years of expertise and experience to build up over time. Well, now that expertise of this lost generation is being given to the next generation, in terms of how do I do this transaction for this client in this moment, and that senior lawyer can understand the facts, send an audio note through their device, connect it to one of our ebook treatises, and deliver it at the point of need when that associate is in front of the client working on a transaction or moving it forward. In fact, there was an interesting example that we had of a Dutch IP lawyer representing a drinks company on an IP case in the court, in EU court in Luxembourg. And, it's traditional for, the parties to meet the judge before the proceedings. And the judge said, well, I've read some of your case, and I assume that, as you present the case, you'll be using cases X, Y, and Z in your admission today. Well, they had cases X, but not Y and Z. So they used their tablet, they looked up the information they had, appended it to their admission for the court that day, and were able to proceed with the court. If they weren't able to do that, they would have had to ask for an adjournment, gone back to make sure it was successful, causing a drag to their customer and delaying the process moving forward. So I've talked about, you know, those things in terms of that experience and the next generation receiving, you know, the experience and connecting to expertise, both in terms of our expertise as Wolters Kluwer and the best experts in new and different ways, but also the experts in their peer group of senior lawyers. What's also interesting for us is if I think of China and emerging or emergent markets, the same dynamics are happening there. And essentially, they're skipping the text-based access to information and going straight to mobile and other types of, you know, multimedia access. Because if you think about it, the keyboard as an input mechanism is not particularly useful if you don't speak a Latin-based language. It's actually a highly complex thing to input Chinese characters using a normal keyboard. With a touch device, with a mobile device, you don't need to learn English, and you can actually understand Chinese law in China for Chinese traders connecting to Akron, Ohio, and doing that trading internationally. So we're seeing the foundations of laws and international norms globally being spurred on by those mobile devices. And I'm sure you all saw the story about a mobile device taking a video picture of a fake Apple store in Cumin City and being posted on a blog. And as a result of that, you know, Apple was able to protect their IP in China. And China and the Chinese authorities, when, you know, globally the story goes around, are actually actively protecting Apple's IP by shutting down those stores. So you are actually seeing huge changes in society about the instantaneous multimedia effect of mobile devices connecting people in terms of trade, connecting people to global norms, and connecting them to legal expertise.
And I think in terms of some of the exciting things around mobility, I think the other thing that we get very excited about at Wolters Kluwer is not only what it can do to connect our customers with the expertise that we have at the core of the company, but also it's really allowing us to change some of our business models, particularly the tablet. I think one of the exciting things, if you have the opportunity to download this app around the Journal of Neurology, and you look at the advertisements in those journals, these are generally drug advertisements, it's phenomenal. I mean, the quality of those advertisements are even better than what you would see in print. So what we're finally beginning to see with the onset of tablets taking hold in many of our markets is that the business model around those tablets is actually very similar in terms of both price points and mechanisms that we would see in some of the traditional media. So we're very encouraged by that. So as we're linking now to business model, I'll ask Baldwin to say a few more words about our results.
Sure. Well, as you have read in the press release this morning, the company, myself, and the board are very pleased with the results. We showed 3% growth in the first 6 months of the year, of which 1% organically. More importantly, you see that the underlying trend lining of moving into more software, online, workflow, services actually is accelerating. And we saw 7% growth of that in the first 6 months of 2011. Now, that has even transformed the portfolio to such an extent that today 72% of our overall revenues do come from online software and services, which is another 2% improvement compared to a year ago. Supporting those trends are, for example, you saw 6% organic growth in our health division. You saw 3% organic growth in our financial and compliance services division. You saw, for example, that we had 6% growth in our software within tax and accounting globally. And we had a market sitting on my right hand here, so 5% organic growth in our North American legal and regulatory businesses. So all these underlying trends do support, you know, an acceleration in the growth of our electronic and service subscription income. And as a result of that, you know, we feel very confident for the remainder of the year, and on the back of that, we have reiterated our full year guidance to you also through the press release.
Thank you. So, you know, feel free. We had hoped it would be, should have said this at the outset, a dialogue, so feel free to jump in with questions. I think you've heard a lot both about opportunities that we see around mobility and really the new frontier, as well as, you know, the good results that we've posted in that first half. So feel free to jump in.
Good morning. It's Edwin van der Schoot from Dutch newspaper Telegraph. I was wondering, you say this, you don't need a lot of infrastructure in India or Africa because everything's going mobile. Well, I've been touring around in sub-Saharan Africa this summer, and I think 9 out of 10 hours I didn't have any reach on my cell phone. So, I mean, surely you need some kind of infrastructure over there, and clearly it's not there. So do you see any, is there any way in which companies like Wolters Kluwer could contribute in getting the infrastructure there? Is it just waiting until somebody else like Orange or whatever company builds a sufficient mobile network over there?
Yeah, I think that, you know, clearly that's not our area of expertise. What we do see, though, is if you go out and you talk to the big telco providers, and I happen to sit on the board of a company like Ericsson, you know, clearly you're beginning to see that infrastructure being built in all the countries around the world. So I think in some places it's more advanced. I think certainly in India and China it's more advanced than perhaps in parts of Africa. But it's definitely the pace of change is happening. I think there are obstacles. You've pointed out one. Clearly, I think literacy is still an obstacle, meaning that if you go to rural parts of China and India, still the rate of illiteracy is still very high. So what we have to think about as providers of information is how do we take some of our content and move it to video, move it to other ways to communicate the essential information. So we are doing that. But I think if you look at our professional customers, this ability to use the mobile device is quite exciting for us, both in terms of, as Mark said, bridging the generational gap, but also in terms of what Andrew said about just giving that ability for people that haven't had access and connectivity to expertise, that connectivity. Yeah, we follow the infrastructure development, right? We're not an infrastructure company. So, but what we're doing, what we're focused on, is we're rapidly repurposing many of our products as well as creating new products so that they can be distributed on, you know, smartphones, on tablets, et cetera. And then as those become adopted by our customers and about other or other citizens in the world, that they will have access to that content.
So what I actually meant to say is, are you perhaps then not frustrated that infrastructure is not moving fast enough?
Go ahead.
There's always a bit of in England we'd say a chicken and egg situation about infrastructure. We can't wait for the infrastructure to be available before we develop applications that will work. And if there are applications that work, then it encourages people to put the infrastructure in place. And I think the thing with mobile infrastructure, certainly in Africa and India, if you were relying on a tethered infrastructure, if you were relying on landlines and so on, you probably would say, well, maybe it's not worth putting the investment in that direction because it will take so long for that to happen. Mobile moves very much faster, so I think it's, to some extent, it's the art of the possible. You see the opportunity. Now, yes, you're right. There are huge gaps right now in coverage. But what did they say about the Eiffel Tower or the Blackpool Tower? If we build it, they will come. These things are, are symbiotic. If there are applications that have value, people will find ways to deliver them to the point of need.
Yeah, and I think what's exciting for us is we're talking a lot about the sort of developing world, but in the vast majority still of our revenues are coming from North America and Western Europe, where mobility is, you know, the infrastructure is there. And so if you look at our core customers, what we find, again, exciting is the uptake of smartphones is quite dramatic in our customer groups. In the law firm market, correct me if I'm wrong, it's like over 90%.
Yeah, so it's over 90%. Yeah. You know, one of the interesting things, not really, it's an anecdotal statistic, but that lost generation. So we have a bunch of different editorial boards for, you know, our various practice areas. And these are all the most senior lawyers in the most prestigious law firms within the US. And you can imagine they're of a certain generation. And 1 year ago, I would say that none of them, you know, really use technology in a meaningful way. And we had a bunch of editorial boards, February, March this year, all but one of them had a tablet that they were actively using every day to communicate with their office, with junior associates, and keep up to date with what's happening in the law. So the uptick and the opportunity for us to really take advantage of that is both in terms of, you know, new opportunities, new products and services that we're doing, but also to work with those customers in a way we've never really been able to work with them in terms of adding value to those technology applications and what is really valuable to a senior lawyer in terms of adding audio notes. And they're highly creative in the ways of how I could now utilize this multimedia device to help my firm, my practice, and the law generally.
So I think what's, again, exciting and why we think of this as a sort of a new frontier is that the first step of taking our content from print into online, you know, there was limitations, right? Very difficult to add video, very difficult to add some things. Now as you look at smartphones and you look at tablets, just the range of or the application of creativity to what we can do with our products is quite exciting, particularly in areas like medicine. And I think what I found very astonishing is two-thirds of all nurses in the U.S. are using their smartphones in patient settings, so at the hospital, getting access to drug information, et cetera, which is a very high statistic in, you know, again, in a short period of time. So this pace of change is accelerating, and I think what's very exciting is it's not just repurposing content from, you know, one application to another, it's really allowing us to fundamentally create new products out of the existing content that we already have.
So you're allowed to switch your smartphone on?
I think actually this is a case of where the users are actually in some cases ahead of the infrastructure. We just finished a bunch of interviews with chief information officers and chief medical officers within a lot of the large hospitals in the U.S. And what they are having to figure out is all the doctors and nurses are bringing in tablets, bringing in smartphones, using them in the hospital, and they have to, you know, they have to figure out then how are they going to build the infrastructure to support that. They have to figure out the privacy issues, all those kinds of things.
There's no conflict with the medical set of devices.
No. No, I mean, at least not, right? In fact, somebody, we were talking about this at the BDP, someone has invented, you always see these things and wish you had thought of it, they've invented a sterile a cover for the iPad, because one of the things they do worry about is you take this iPad from one room to another and you bring germs with it from patient to patient. So they've created a sort of a rubber glove for the iPad, which is, again, shows you just, you know, how far some of these things are taking off. Sorry, you had a question, Roberta.
Just to follow up on that, so those nurses who are taking their smartphones in, are they accessing, for example, your content?
Yes.
They're
yes.
not accessing the internet or Google or checking. They've downloaded applications that are Wolters Kluwer onto their smartphones.
Yeah, now they may also be going out to the internet, et cetera, but what we are, you know, we follow our customers around within the hospital, and if you look at at the point they're at the bedside of the patient, the single most important information they generally need is drug information.
Yeah.
What's the right dosage? What's the right interaction?
Yeah.
So you know that what they're doing right now is they're accessing our drug information and saying, okay, what should I prescribe? Or the doctor has prescribed X, you know, is it going to have an adverse reaction to something else that the patient's taking? Mm-hmm. And they just can get that information from us, you know, right at that point of care.
But I guess this is related to my question, Andrew, to you, which is, you said that you embrace open source information or open access information.
Yeah.
Can you tell me, are you talking about the open source community and making information free?
No. I'm talking about open access publishing, which is something slightly different and quite specific. In the provision of information, there is no such thing as free. Ultimately, somebody has to pay. Now, there are various business models around that. I talked about the traditional subscription model where the consumer of the information buys a subscription to a journal or buys a book and uses it. The open access movement is simply an alternative business model, an alternative funding model. It essentially says that the people who develop the research, the authors, the funders, whoever they may be, it might be a pharmaceutical company, it might be somebody like the Wellcome Trust in the UK, which puts a lot of money into research. As part of that funding, they will make the information available to the user. So it's free at the point of delivery. So I can go onto a website, I can look at a journal article, and it's free. Because the cost of putting it up there and the cost of maintaining it has been met at the supply side rather than at the consumption side. So that's open access.
But that means they're not selling the information to you that you then repackage and distribute.
I'm sorry?
That means they're not selling the information to you that you then, you know, or it's not your information, it's not Walter Skluhr information. That you can redistribute.
Yeah, but I think we're talking about different things. I think part of the way the open access model works, I mean, publishers, including Walter Skluhr, have open access publishing models, and we would simply collect our money, as it were, at the supply end rather than at the delivery end. So. You know, people think that it's as simple as putting an article up on the internet. Well, that article has to be peer-reviewed, particularly in the medical market. So the information has to be validated. They have to go through a process where the research is carried out properly, it's regulated, and it's validated. It's then put up on the internet, so somebody has to fund a server, somebody has to fund an infrastructure for that to be accessed. And it really doesn't matter whether the funding for that is at the beginning or is at the end. There is a business model. It doesn't happen. It doesn't happen in isolation. It doesn't happen automatically. Now, a large part of the open access movement, you're quite right, is to do with copyrights. But once the information is out there in open access and open source, then anybody can access it. So by definition, it's in common ownership. That applies largely to journal articles. I'm not aware, and I may be wrong, I'm not aware that there is any hard clinical information out there available in an open access format. I may be wrong, but I don't think there is.
But sort of, I think, to your broader point, Roberta, if you go out and you talk to any one of our customers, again, whether they're lawyers, doctors, accountants, most of them are accessing Google, Yahoo as a matter of their daily work. But what they tell us over and over again is this classic problem, right? They put in a search term and they just get back too many results, and the results often aren't relevant. And if you're a very busy doctor, a very busy lawyer, it's not a productive way to access or digest information. So in fact, what we find is that these broad search engines like the Googles and the Yahoos, they've actually helped demonstrate to our customers the value of what we do for them, because we are able to not just, again, give them access to relevant information, but more and more we're pushing out the insight. We're actually saying, doctor, this is what you need to know to treat a patient on hypertension by some of the new innovative products that we've created. Is we're giving them the guidelines, we're giving them treatment options right at the moment they're typing in hypertension. and that is demonstrating value. So most of our customers do use all these search engines, but they tell us again more and more that they're just not sufficient to really get them the right information that they need at the time.
Yeah, one of the things about mobile devices that is exciting for that, you know, senior generation is this notion of an app. So an app is almost anti-multitasking, right? It's very focused on a specific task, and it's very focused on a specific point in time. And what, you know, senior lawyers are really trying to get all of their junior lawyers to do is really focus on valued and validated information and expertise that will help them rather than general information. What they don't want is to have to go to a client and say, oops, we made a mistake because the associate picked the information up from Google. You know, if it's a $1 billion deal, they want to make sure that the information is right all of the time to get the transaction done. And certainly using applications as a way of really narrowing the focus on, you know, here's the task at hand, and through that lens, I'll access information, and that's highly valuable to them to keep everyone on track. And certainly exciting for us is, how do we think about the point of use in specific tasks and specific context of us driving our information and our users through that in a really meaningful way?
In fact, in the health market, what we hear over and over again for doctors is patients will come in with this much information they've printed off the internet, and in fact, the doctor has to spend time sort of debunking a lot of that. And so a big part of, in, for example, in UpToDate, we now offer through our, again, through physicians, patient information. So we've kind of created product that a typical patient can understand, in part to meet the need that doctors say, which is we need some very simple patient information that's accurate that we can give the patient, as opposed to having them rely on a lot of the things that's on the internet that's just not either accurate or relevant.
Exactly. I think that plays in our mission, right, to bring information to those professionals in an effective, efficient, accurate way. And we create, by doing this, less mistakes, more assurance, and a lot of efficiency to the workflow of the doctor, the nurse, the lawyer, or the tax accountant.
Yeah. Did you have, yeah, please.
Yeah, then this whole process is still subscription-based, right? So you sell this product to a hospital or a group of doctors.
Yes, largely.
They get this app, and you keep it up to date constantly, and you pay a price every year. Is that how it works?
Largely, yes.
Yeah, but still 75% of our revenues for Wolters Kluwer are subscription-based, and that's clearly our preferred business model. But I think what is exciting is that you do see also that we offer things pay-per-view. Yeah. We also offer things per app. We have many different ways that customers can buy it, but what we find is, the vast majority of our customers want to access this, you know, anywhere, anytime, and so that lends itself very much to subscription pricing.
Is there a bigger growth wave coming up? Because when you look at the growth rates in the industry of tablets and smartphones, it's really big at Apple and other hardware manufacturers, also at chip makers. But when you look at the growth rate for the content industry, it's not really a big thing. You are growing 7%, but is there a bigger growth rate coming up?
Yeah, I think I don't think anybody knows, right? Because I do think we're in, by definition, a new frontier means that you're in that stage where there's a lot of experimentation going on. I think what's exciting for us is two factors. One is the uptake that both Andrew and Mark have talked about. And, this is the fastest adoption of some new technology that certainly I've seen in the industry. That's one exciting factor. And then the second thing is this notion that it's not just repurposing, it's not just taking content from book to device, it's really rethinking how we add value, it's adding audio, it's adding the community elements that both Andrew and Mark talked about. So lots of exciting things. I think, to your question of what does it mean ultimately for the growth rate of Wolters Kluwer, I think you're clearly seeing momentum build in our growth, and that's from a combination of more and more of our portfolio is online software and services, and those are growing at a higher rate. Now, the challenge, of course, that we have is we do still have a print portfolio, and that does, it has been in decline, and it will continue to decline. But as we get to that sort of shifting where a much higher percentage of our portfolio is coming from faster growth online and software, you will see that we can accelerate the growth potential of the portfolio. And that's very much what we're focused on. And how tablets kind of change all that, I mean, only time will tell.
It could certainly increase our addressable market.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Sorry?
It could certainly increase the market we're able to address.
Yeah, because it could be frustrating that most of the growth goes now to the hardware manufacturers and not to the content producers. It's a general problem for the content industry. So,
yeah, ultimately, people still need information there.
Yep.
And I think more and more they need these what we call smart tools.
Yes.
Because the challenge for most of our customers is they have way too much information. And what they really need is, you know, what we would call an insight. They really need what is the most relevant piece of information that's going to help me make the right diagnosis, make the right decision.
These fast developments, they also are a big challenge, I could have mentioned, for your employees. Do you have the feeling that your employees have the right knowledge to really gain these advantages in this whole new industry of tablets, etc.?
Yeah, go ahead, Mark. You deal with this every day. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a terrific question. I think the reality is that there's not many companies that have employees. It's changing so fast that even the companies inventing this technology don't have the expertise as to where it's going. So, for example, you know, me and some other executives in Wolters Kluwer met with Apple last year when they just launched the tablet, and we were asking them, you know, terrific device, here's what we'd like to do with it, you know, have you thought of this, have you thought of that? And, you know, their response to us was, hey guys, it's been out 12 weeks, we don't really know the answer to these questions yet. And I think, you know, that's the exciting thing about being at a next frontier. So whether it's, you know, what does the business model and the growth rate ultimately look like, or, you know, how does the dynamics look like to your skill set and the talent that you need within your organization, is it's changing so fast that we're in the middle of this great change. So there is some turmoil, certainly with our employees, but the vast majority are very enthused and invigorated that, you know, they're involved in, you know, this watershed moment of this great change in the way that content and the media generally will be consumed over the next 5 years, as Nancy said. You know, in our industry, within the legal market, you know, I certainly think that, you know, mobile device adoption will probably have a bigger impact on our industry than the internet did.
Yeah.
I agree.
In terms of the adoption, the use, how we actually provide information. You know, if you just think about, you know, this arcane elements of the law. So in any country, you know, property rights, you know, there's normally describing a property has very specific arcane language. With mobile technology and maps, now we can actually have instantly, here's a picture of who owns what property at any point in time, which is a fundamentally different way of thinking about the law and how it's provided. So it's not text-based, it's actually visual. And with a self-aware device, you know, so it's got a GPS, it's got, you know, cell phone triangulation, all that good stuff, it actually knows if you're in a spot that you own or if you're not in a spot that you own. So it's incredibly exciting and changing at the time, and most people and certainly our employees really feel invigorated and excited about it. Quite frankly, we need to keep them focused on some of the other areas keep that business going as well.
And just in general, and then I'd like Andrew to talk about the health business. In general, as we've been going through this digital transformation at Wolters Kluwer, we have been shifting, you know, the employee workforce. So today we have more software engineers on staff or through partnerships with our Indian providers than we have editorial staff. So we've been rapidly, you know, during this transformation, adding those capabilities. So if you look at how we develop products today, you know, when I started in the industry, it was very much a singular activity. You know, an outside author would create a book, or an editor would work with that author, you know, kind of one-on-one. Now, if you look at the products that Mark and Andrew described, it's done in a team. You have someone who knows the customer, you have someone who knows the technology, you have an editor who knows the subject area, and those people all work together to create the product. So that actually has made it, I think, quite a more exciting workplace for the majority of the folks at Wolters Kluwer. Maybe, Andrew, you can talk about experience?
Certainly. I mean, the phrase this is our industrial revolution. We're in the middle of this. And it is by turns exciting, invigorating, and scary. because everything changes all the time. But I think it's important to understand that at base, the values of our publishing companies really remain pretty much the same. We're talking about delivery. We're talking about the opportunity to use different ways of delivering content, to combine content in ways that we were never able to do in the past, and to take that content easily to places where it could never have gone. But Nancy mentioned that, you know, there's a lot of stuff out there on the internet. I mean, the other phrase I quite often use when I'm doing industry talks is, when you go and see your doctor, you don't want to hear him say, I think I'll just Google that. Because medical research and legal research is about precision. It's about the right information, right place, right time. And the fundamentals of bringing that information together and the skills of creating that information really haven't changed. And I don't think will change. The pace will change. The way it's delivered will change. The ability to access it, combine it, and use it in really exciting and interesting ways will change. But fundamentally, if you buy something which has a Wolters Kluwer brand on it, you're going to trust that because you know the values that underpin the information. Whereas if you go out onto the internet, you know, it's the Wild West out there. You really don't know what you're getting. So those values, those fundamental values remain.
That's why I think one of the things I've certainly seen in the, I can't speak for the 175 years of Wolters Kluwer, but certainly in the last 25 years in the industry, is that the value of brands has really increased quite dramatically because of what Andrew just talked about, which is there's too much information. It's hard for people to figure out is it right or wrong, and so people have to rely on our brands as being a trusted source for information. So I think in this next frontier, what I personally believe is that the value of the content providers like Wolters Kluwer is actually going to increase. Because, you know, people recognize that they need trusted information. They recognize that they really need that connectivity to the expertise. And that's, if you look at the other last thing, the other comment I'll make before your question is, you know, what you see happening in every one of our professions is this pushing down of the delivery of the expertise into other, you know, people that are less educated within the profession. So, you know, physicians going to nurses, going to, nurse practitioners, to lower and lower as they try and get more efficiency. Same thing in the law market, you know, pushing more work down to paralegals. So as a result of that, you know, customers really need to have tools that help those people within their profession be able to get the work done and make sure that it's accurate. Sorry, please. Micah.
Now, you need all these software experts and other experts. It does sound like the costs of products go up as well, right? Or am I wrong?
Yeah, the biggest cost, if you look at our cost structure, which I think is pretty typical in the industry, is that, you know, about 40. In fact, Bob, why don't you talk about this, about our labor cost and what that means?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think there are two sides to the coin here.
Yeah, thank you.
On the one hand, you do see that there is an inflation in salaries, given the fact that you have more software and more technical skilled IT people. On the other hand, we are able to offset that by the fact that the overall cost structure of the firm also becomes more fixed. So you can imagine that the technology infrastructure that is required is more leverable than that you used to have under in a print environment. That helps. And secondly, as we are a global company, we also use resources on a global scale, all the way from the US to Europe, the Netherlands, to India, China, and where you have. Now, of course, there are wage arbitrage differentials between those regions, and we use the best expertise we can find in the world to support our products.
Yeah, so, interestingly, you know, in terms of apps, we have an app that we've just launched on IP, our manual IP, which is actually uses all of the core of a product that was developed in Spain, which is a different app. So there's a lot of that sharing of the underlying infrastructure, and then we deliver the product to the specific market with the content. So there's a lot of that sharing of,
absolutely,
you know, global assets.
So the operational leverage in the cost structure actually improves.
Yeah, the other thing is just real quick on that is a lot of the investments we made initially to take our products from print to online, which is this digitization of content, as we're now taking them to tablets and smartphones, we're leveraging that historical investment. So the incremental cost of doing some of these things is quite low in comparison to the first time you had to make your content digital. Roberta? Yeah.
If you guys are ahead of the curve in thinking about how you want to present your content, do you have any ideas of what the next kind of mechanism or tablet or gadget will be? I'd like to know what you think about that. But also, are you in talks with Apple, or you talk to Apple and other hardware manufacturers, would it make sense to create, for Apple to create a specific gadget specifically for you? Do you see any opportunities there?
Yeah, no, I think with Apple specifically, they just have so much opportunity right now.
Yeah.
They're much more focused on consumer markets than professional. I do think in the health space, you know, there's a lot of interest on how do you create, you know, a portable medical record, how do you connect all of that going on. I think what we, again, get excited about is within our health markets, there's significant amount of monies now flowing from governments like the U.S. government, like the Chinese government, specifically into the hospital market to build the infrastructure around healthcare IT. So if you look at the U.S. within the TARP money, forget about, you know, healthcare reform, within TARP, $40 billion were earmarked just for, you know, healthcare IT. And so as a result of that, our hospital customers can use some of those funds to buy our products. So you're really seeing for the first time that, you know, there's a lot of money to support this transformation in healthcare. So that is very, again, exciting for us. So I think as it relates to the broad tech players like a Microsoft or Apple, where there is an intersection is they are also interested in health, and we are a big player in health information. But I think right now, you know, everybody's seeing just an opportunity to exploit the consumer demand that there is for these.
But are you
tablets.
Looking at tie-ups with any of these, with Microsoft, Apple, or any of these?
We talk to all of them, and in some cases we have specific, you know, kind of partnerships, but it's never an exclusive relationship. I mean, they're working with a number of different, you know, publishers and other information companies. And I don't think you need to have an exclusive partnership with those folks. I think what's critical in this whole process is really the term I use is the ability to create the product concept. That is what really is required. So it's really that core capability of people who understand the area, whether it's law, medicine, accounting, and have the creativity to say, okay, we have this book on neurology. Mm-hmm. How are we going to take that book and make it an interesting product on a tablet? And so really that's what's required to be successful here, because the cost of digitization, all of that, that's, you know, kind of already happened. So really it's about the creativity here.
So the way we structure the content is in such a way that whatever the technological developments will be after the iPad, after the iPhone, we can always follow that. So also to your earlier point about, aren't you frustrated that you see the profits going to those, to the hardware makers? You know, the answer is our content always remains valuable. We have to adapt that content in a way that it's actually most pleasantly used and efficiently used by our customers. So meaning that any technological development in the future, we can actually, you know, follow along without a problem.
Caroline says, are there any questions from our colleagues on the phone? No? Okay. Anything Roberta asked about G-Wiz things? What would you say is a G-Wiz thing happening?
A G-Wiz thing happening. You know, if I could predict that, I probably would be working here.
Yeah.
you know, I think it's going to be, you know, I think you need to put it into context, as I said, you know, the Apple iPad, so tablet being the next big thing. You know, a year ago, nobody probably, you know, maybe a year ago now, people would have thought about it, but certainly, the uptake of that nobody expected, and you know the dynamic changes in the marketplace are really tough to predict. You know, who knows what Microsoft and Nokia are going to do? For example, maybe they're going to come up with the next new thing. I don't know. Our view is always to be platform agnostic and really look at, you know, where's the point of where our customers and our content intersect in a way that we can add the most amount of value. What I can say is that if you think about these self-aware devices that we all carry around, there's huge amount of opportunity in the technology that exists today without us trying to, you know, future predict what's happening tomorrow.
I do think one trend you see across our markets is that many of our products begin to start to be what I would call smart products, meaning they start to be able to learn in a certain way. So a quick example is an accountant, right? The typical thing that happens to an accountant is their customer comes in with all the tax receipts, and it's basically still in paper form, no matter how hard they try to make that an electronic exchange. So they deliver all these receipts, other kinds of things. Today, we have a product called ProSystem Scan, and what it does is if you go into an accountant, particularly in the U.S., they typically work with two computer screens. You know, on one hand, they have the software that we sell them that helps them develop the form and create the return. And on the other hand, they've scanned in, or an assistant has scanned in all those documents, and our software basically can say, okay, this is a 1099, which is a bank interest form. That goes into this category on the form, on the tax return. This is a W-2 form. That goes into another one. And so it organizes all of these paper documents into the form or into the logic of a tax return. So you watch how an accountant works. They look at this, you know, on one screen, and they know exactly where it's going to be in the form. And so it's made the time to actually, you know, decipher the information and create a tax return, you know, much less than it was in the old manual way of having to look at each piece of paper. So that's an example of, I think, this kind of application of almost artificial intelligence to our products. And we have many, many examples of that within Wolters Kluwer's software products, where the products fundamentally have some kind of ability either to learn based on what the user does with the product or to create kind of intelligence in the workflow. And I do think, while it may not be a gee whiz category, you're seeing that really starting to take hold within the professional markets.
Yeah, it's a value to any customer if we have reason to keep them.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's been one of our fastest growing products. So not only is it a new revenue stream for the scan product, but it also reinforces retention of the core application.
Yeah, I mean, I think you will see more of that, you know, learning devices, not just about input from the user, but actually where the user is. So all those GPS, chips and all of those devices, it will understand more the context of where you are. So if you're a lawyer, for example, and it knows where you are, you could be a court or a client, and because it knows the address of the client, it will be able to connect to your matter and pull down all of that information. So really focus you on the specific information at the point of time you need it. I think that's going to be an increasing trend of that, you know, learning.
Yeah, so other questions or? Well, I want to say thank you. Just a quick summary. We clearly feel pleased with our results for the half year. Again, they reinforce the strategy of Wolters Kluwer around digital transformation and around globalization. We are also excited about this next frontier around what some of the trends that we're seeing around mobility, and other kinds of new technology developments, what that will mean for us in terms of creating new products. So we want to say thank you for your attention, for your questions, for your time this morning, and we hope that we'll see you again soon.